expected for central Illinois with an inch or two possible north of I-74. Some light sleet and freezing rain is possible farther south across portions of central and southeastern Illinois this afternoon and evening. The entire weather system will shift east of the area tonight with some patchy freezing drizzle possible after midnight. Strong high pressure will build into the plains tonight and tomorrow, bringing us quiet and cold weather for the beginning of the weekend. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, a winter weather advisory is in effect until 4 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday morning, for the following counties: Moultrie, Douglas, and Coles. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon: cloudy with a chance of freezing rain or snow late this afternoon. We'll see a high in the mid-20s. The wind from the east at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, snow and sleet are likely this evening. Then after midnight, we have a chance of freezing drizzle and flurries. An accumulation of up to 1 inch is possible. The low 19. The wind will be out of the northeast from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 30. The wind from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with the temperature holding near steady in the mid-20s. The wind will be from the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Sunday, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-40s and a south wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain. Expect a low in the mid-30s. Monday, partly sunny with a high in the low 40s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the single digits to the low 30s. And precipitation was reported across much of the two states, mostly in the northern and central sections of Illinois and Indiana. Snow was reported in Rockford at the top of the hour, the temperature there 8. Light snow at O'Hare, 16 degrees. Cloudy at Bloomington, Mattoon, and Carbondale. It was 19 at Bloomington, 24 at Mattoon, 32 degrees at Carbondale. In South Bend, light snow, 15 degrees. Lafayette reported light snow and 16 degrees. Cloudy in Indianapolis and Terre Haute. Terre Haute reported 24 degrees at the top of the hour. Indianapolis, 22. Willard Airport, cloudy at the top of the hour, 20 degrees. The dew point 9, the relative humidity 62%, the wind out of the east at 15, giving us a wind chill reading of 6, and the barometric pressure 30.04 and falling. At 12:40, 19 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Nearly 200 people with developmental disabilities live at the state-run Jacksonville Developmental Center. Illinois Psychiatric Hospital in Tinley Park is home to 50 short-term care patients, a number that would be larger if it weren't for staffing shortages. Governor Pat Quinn wants both closed by fall. That has broad implications for the state employees, for who staff them, for the patients and people who live there or are being treated there, and their legal guardians, and for the state budget. Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky has more.
The Quinn administration is branding it a rebalancing. Patients who live in the Jacksonville and Tinley Park facilities will be moved into community settings. In a statement, the governor said it's an approach that will improve the quality of life for people with developmental disabilities and mental health conditions. His spokeswoman, Bree Callahan, says Illinois is way behind the national trend.
We institutionalize more individuals with developmental disabilities than all states except for California and Texas, which obviously have much larger populations than we do.
Jacksonville will be a start. The plan calls for 3 more developmental centers to close within the next couple of years. Callahan says new evaluations will be done to decide which ones when the time comes. But she adds that Quinn isn't trying to do away with these institutions altogether. That's what Don Moss, the director of United Cerebral Palsy of Illinois, wants to happen. He says institutions should go the way of the orphanage.
Small, integrated group homes in the community near to families are much preferable to to the isolated, out-of-sight, out-of-mind, large institutional systems.
The Quinn administration says the change will be made carefully using what it calls a person-centered approach. Before they're moved out, patients' families will be consulted and their needs assessed. Each resident will then have an individual budget based on those needs. For those who need round-the-clock care, that could mean moving to a group home. Others may be able to live with their families. The governor's office estimates for the most challenging patients, the cost will average $7,000 a month. Which brings up another reason for the change. The governor's office projects closing the two facilities will save the state about $20 million a year. The way Rita Burke sees it, Quinn is choosing to balance the budget on the backs of the state's most vulnerable citizens. Burke heads the Illinois League of Advocates for the Developmentally Disabled.
We live in fear that our family member, that his future will be compromised, that he may end up in jail, on the street, in a setting that is inadequate to his needs.
Part of the savings will come by laying off the 400 people working in Jacksonville and Tinley Park's nearly 200 employees, many of whom are members of AFSCME, the state's largest public employees union. The union carries lots of political weight. Its opposition helped stave off Quinn's plans earlier this year to shut down Jacksonville, Tinley Park, and five other state facilities. Then AFSCME and the communities where those facilities are based galvanized and held protests. A legislative commission voted to keep all seven open, and lawmakers worked out a budget agreement with Quinn. Jacksonville Mayor Andy Ezzard says this time feels different.
This is the first time the governor's office has called me and said it's going to happen. So it hit home pretty hard.
He says he feels like Jacksonville has jumped through hoops, but in the end, he says he feels like his city's being used in a political game. That's how Republican Representative Jim Watson, who's from Jacksonville, sees it too. Watson was part of a small group Quinn gathered to get input before announcing this set of closures. But Watson says he doesn't believe the governor ever wanted input. He says Quinn always knew he was going to close Jacksonville, and he suspects it's payback. The area's solidly Republican and voted overwhelmingly against Quinn in the last election.
I would accuse, and I do believe, that politics had a play in this.
Quinn's office denies politics has anything to do with it. They point out Tinley Park is Democrats' turf. The administration says that mental hospital was chosen because of its history of lapses in patient care. It says Jacksonville was chosen because it's old and needs repairs. Nevertheless, Watson says its closure will be devastating for his community of 19,000, not just to the economy, but to Jacksonville's very character. The developmental center has been there for 150 years.
It's routine as a child growing up here that you're used to and comfortable with folks with various disabilities because you see it all the time. It's just become a community that opens its heart and its doors.
Both Watson and AFSCME say they'll fight to keep the facility's doors open. But according to Quinn's office, this is a decision that's ultimately up to the executive branch. And though Pat Quinn has a reputation for changing his mind, this time it appears his mind is made up. Tinley Park is scheduled to close in July, with the last residents moving out of Jacksonville in October. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
It's 12:45. This tough economy has not been good for home values in many areas of the country. At least the thinking goes that means saving money on your property taxes. Not so. Millions of homeowners are actually seeing their property taxes either hold steady or climb, even as their homes are worth much less. Brian Bull of member station WCPN in Cleveland reports there might not be much homeowners can do about that.
I won't say how much my home value has fallen in recent years, but at least I'm not alone in asking, what's up with my property taxes? Turns out that the economic downturn, state laws, and appraisals have created some nasty surprises. Cuyahoga County's fiscal officer, Wade Steen, has been taking lots of calls from unhappy homeowners lately. He says they most often live in a community where voters passed a recent levy. That's a property tax measure that boosts funding for things like schools and libraries.
Shaker Heights comes to mind, where the voters have voted for those school levies, which is going to naturally raise the taxes that they pay.
With about $3,700 paid per $100,000 of home value, the Cleveland area community of Shaker Heights has the highest property tax rates in Ohio. Voters here approved major school levies in 2006 and 2010. Maybe some residents grumble, but most enjoy what levies provide, like Myra White, who's lived in Shaker since 1964.
We have garbage pickup in our backyard. If they miss my house and I call, they'll make a special run on another day. On Halloween, there are fire trucks and police cars driving around. I guess that's just kind of for fun, but it's also like a patrolling thing. It's almost, oh gosh, I hate to say this, but it's a little bit of a concierge environment.
Levies are often the only recourse school districts and other agencies have for increased funding. Kevin O'Brien of the Great Lakes Environmental Finance Center says that's because the recession has forced states to slash budgets, sending less money to counties and municipalities.
And this hurts communities, not having the revenue that they anticipated from the prior years and having to carry the same number of staff and the same body of services, so they have to find creative ways to cover the gap.
Another reason for your property taxes not seesawing with your home value could be state law. Back in the 1970s and 80s, many legislatures passed bills designed to keep property tax collections from automatically going up with inflation. Again, Wade Steen.
Voters fail to remember that through the 80s, when property values were going up astronomically, their tax bills were holding fairly steady, maybe increasing modestly. But yet we never heard anyone say, geez, my property value has doubled in 5 years. This is great, but my taxes aren't doubling.
But the flip side to these laws, found in nearly 40 states, is that when home values plummet, the assessment rate can increase to keep revenues at that fixed rate. And that's what's happening today. You might also take your government to task if they don't do annual assessments. Jacqueline Byers heads research for the National Association of Counties.
I live in Virginia, and they reassess property every year. But right across the river in Maryland, they are in a three-year assessment cycle. So what can really happen to them is that their property taxes will be high, even in a down economy, because they're using data for the value of their property that's 2 to 3 years old.
In other words, the assessment's based on years when home values were higher and not reflecting current value. So what can you do? In most cases, you can challenge your assessment if you feel it's not accurate and can back up that claim. Ohio's Cuyahoga County projects 26,000 property valuation complaints this year, almost twice the number from 2011. For NPR News, I'm Brian Bull in Cleveland.
Support comes from Subaru of Champaign County, located on Route 45 in Savoy. Dedicated to preserving our planet, the Subaru Assembly Plant in Lafayette, Indiana, achieved zero landfill status, with nothing from its manufacturing efforts going into a landfill. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. SubaruofChampaign.com or 352-4700.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of January, 2012. It's the anniversary of the first roller coaster. The Coney Island Roller Coaster opened on this date, 1885. LaMarcus Thompson had the patent on it. It was called the Gravity Switchback Railway. Cost a nickel to ride, and it drew huge crowds. It's the birthday of Robert Olin Butler, born Granite City.